We're delighted to welcome the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, Teresa Villars MP. The Secretary of State is Member of Parliament for Chipping Barnet, but of course before that she was an MEP for the London Region from 1999 to 2005. So she has broad experience both in Europe and now in Parliament. And since last year, since she took up her cabinet post as Secretary of State for Northern Ireland. You'll be aware this week that she has presided over the initial meeting of another talks process. I rather think we should patent a process or a programme. I'm sure there's a piece of software to be written as to how to conduct these things, because we've immense experience in Northern Ireland now, and I'm sure the Secretary of State will be able to avail of that. But we are delighted that she's come along. After she speaks, we're going to take a number of questions, and when you I'll call out the names of the questioner, I'd be grateful if you'd stand up because there are roving microphones and the Secretary of State will be able to hear your question. So it's very, very great pleasure. May I invite the Secretary of State Northern Ireland to address the conference. Thank you.
Well, thank you for that kind introduction. It's a real pleasure to be here with you at your party conference, and I'd like to thank Mike Nesbitt for inviting me along to speak to you this afternoon. Your conference is taking place at an auspicious time as we embark on negotiations designed to make Stormont work better and tackle the issues that are holding Northern Ireland back. The Ulster Unionist Party has a long and distinguished record of doing the right thing for Northern Ireland. You deserve huge credit for the courageous role you played in securing the political settlement, which has transformed life here for the better. And I have in mind not just your contribution to the historic Belfast Agreement of 1998, I'd also like to put on record my admiration for the many members of your party who served in uniform to defend the rule of law against attack from terrorists. And I'd like to pay tribute to all those who were prepared to put themselves forward for elected office during the darkest days and whose dedication and courage ensured that the flame of democracy was never extinguished. And it's due in no small part to your party's efforts that terrorism was ultimately defeated and that the future of Northern Ireland was settled on the basis of democracy and consent. So as we come to the end of a week which has seen us mark the 30th anniversary of a terrible attack on my party in Brighton, let us also remember those in your party who lost their lives because they were prepared to stand up for what they believed in. And let us never forget, too, that the long struggle against all forms of terrorism here was never just a Northern Ireland struggle. It was one for the whole of the United Kingdom to defend the cherished values of freedom and democracy that are such a fundamental part of who we are and what we believe in this country. So this government will never underestimate the part that you have played in achieving a better, more secure and more peaceful Northern Ireland. And in that effort to build a better future, over the years your party and mine have often stood side by side, as we did at the general election in 2010. Now you're probably relieved to hear that I'm not here to dwell on the history of that project. Controversial though it was a sincere attempt by the leadership of both our parties to give people here the opportunity to participate in mainstream national UK politics. And although it's come to an end, there were a number of commitments we made together at the general election, which the Conservative Party has been able to deliver in government. We made a commitment to a fair and just resolution to the crisis in the Presbyterian Mutual Society to help those people abandoned by Labour, and we delivered on that commitment. We made a commitment to end double jobbing at Westminster and Stormont, and double jobbing will end in just about 200 days' time. We made a commitment to consider the devolution of corporation tax, and that decision is to be made in weeks. We made a commitment to support the police in the fight against terrorism, and we provided an extra $230 million to help the PSNI keep people here safe from the dissidents. We made a commitment that there'd be no more costly and open-ended inquiries into the past, and there have been no new costly and open-ended public inquiries into the past. And we also made a commitment that, unlike our Labour predecessors, we would never be neutral on the Union. This government believes in our United Kingdom, and we believe that England, Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland are stronger and better together. We're stronger together, better able to compete globally and deal with economic shocks like the 2008 financial crisis. We're more prosperous together, benefiting from being part of the sixth largest economy in the world and all the opportunities for trade and business that brings. We're more influential together. As a United Kingdom, we maintain our unique and leading position in the world as a member of the UN Security Council, NATO, the EU, the G7, the G20, and the Commonwealth. And it's as a United Kingdom that we have for centuries stood together for freedom and liberty in the face of tyranny, outlawing the slave trade, defeating fascism, and helping liberate Europe from communism. So let nobody ever suggest for a minute that the case for the United Kingdom isn't a strong, positive and forward-looking one. It is, and we will always make the positive case. And I'm sure, like me, all of you here were relieved and delighted on the morning of the 19th of September when we heard that Scotland had voted decisively to remain part of the family of nations that makes up the United Kingdom. Our task now is to deliver on the commitments made in the referendum campaign, a stronger union that includes more powers for Scotland on a basis that also provides fairness for England, Wales and Northern Ireland. Here in Northern Ireland, the basis of the devolution settlement is, of course, the Belfast Agreement and its successors. And you should be proud of the benefits that the agreements have delivered for Northern Ireland. The constitutional future of Northern Ireland settled on the basis of democratic consent. A vastly improved relationship between Northern Ireland and the Republic, with sensible arrangements for practical cooperation and the territorial claim removed from the Irish Constitution. The longest continuous period of devolved government since the 60s, robust protection for the rights and identities of both main traditions, British and Irish, relations between the UK and Ireland stronger than ever before, as we saw with the visit of President Higgins. And of course, most important of all, the main paramilitary campaigns at an end, the security situation transformed, and a whole generation growing up in Northern Ireland without the constant shadow of terrorism hanging over them. Yet for all these agreements, it's clear that the institutions at Stormont are in difficulty. And if we're going to continue to secure a brighter future for Northern Ireland, it's vital that we do all we can to lift the blockages that are preventing the executive from delivering the effective government that people here expect and which they deserve. So that's why the government made a realistic assessment that the time was right for a new round of cross-party talks to be convened. These began on Thursday, and I very much welcome the fact that Mike and his team were there as full participants in the discussion, ensuring that the voice of Ulster unionism was heard loud and clear. And I give you this assurance, as one of the signatories of the Belfast Agreement and its successors, there will be some issues in the discussions that directly involve the Irish government. And I welcome the support of Charlie Flanagan and his team in this process. But under this government, these talks will remain faithful to the three-stranded approach that's worked in the past. That means Northern Ireland's internal arrangements remain exclusively matters for the political parties here and for the UK government. Now, the agenda for the talks is admittedly quite a big one, But within that agenda, I believe that there are two clear areas which we need to deal with as a matter of urgency. The first of these concerns budgetary matters and welfare reform. In 2010, the UK had the largest structural budget deficit in the developed world. With determination, we've managed to get that down by more than a third. But there's some way to go before it's eliminated. Here in Northern Ireland, spending reductions that the executive has faced since 2010 have been around 1% a year in real terms. That's far lower than the reduction faced by much of the rest of the public sector. English local government, for example, has had to deal with a 27% cut in the same four-year period. Public spending per head in Northern Ireland remains roughly a quarter higher than the UK average. So the argument that the block grant has been slashed or that Northern Ireland is being unfairly treated is just wrong. But with upward pressure in health spending ever present, even relatively small budget reductions mean that hard choices need to be made to ensure the public sector works more efficiently so resources can be focused on the frontline services we all value so much. If we're to build a more secure future for Northern Ireland, it's imperative that the executive's finances are put on a stable, long-term footing. And that includes going ahead with welfare reform to replace a broken system where costs are spiralling out of control with one which rewards work, protects the vulnerable, and is fair to taxpayers. But putting the budget on a sustainable footing has to go further than that. It has to include more wide-ranging reform to reduce the cost of government in Northern Ireland. Over the past 4 years, governments across the Western world have had to grapple with these questions so that they can find a way to live within their means. The pressures are likely to increase in future years as the squeeze on UK government spending continues until 2018. I'm afraid it simply isn't possible for the Northern Ireland executive to be immune from those pressures or free from the difficult choices that they make inevitable. That's why I've been pressing all of Northern Ireland's leaders to grip these issues, agree a budget for next year as a matter of the utmost urgency. The second area, though, that urgently needs to be tackled covers the legacy matters that can so often embitter community relations and damage the political relationships which are so crucial to making the devolved institutions work. Disputes over flags, parades and the past are consuming ever-increasing amounts of time and resources. Now, I fully appreciate how very difficult and sensitive these issues are for members of this party and for many across Northern Ireland. So I give you this assurance. At the last election, our manifesto made clear that politically motivated violence, from whatever side it came, was never justified, and we will never be a party to a rewrite of history that gives it any spurious legitimacy. And I fully stand by those words. But at the same time, I believe there are huge benefits for Northern Ireland if an agreed way forward can be found on how we tackle the legacy of the past. Crucially, this would provide the chance to develop a balanced, transparent, and accountable approach, one that has objectivity and historical accuracy as a golden thread running through all of its work and which puts the interests of victims at its heart. So I would urge this party and all others to engage with seriousness and with determination on these matters, and I very much welcome the comments in Mike's speech this morning along those lines. As the Prime Minister said earlier this week, these are issues that need to be tackled so that Northern Ireland's political leaders can focus on the big priorities of building a stronger, healthier economy and a genuinely shared society. And there is increasing evidence that thanks to the government's long-term economic plan, Northern Ireland is turning the corner in terms of its economy and is on the road to recovery. Unemployment is falling, the number of in work is rising, providing more security for hard-working taxpayers here. This year alone, the private sector has created over 16,000 new employee jobs, easily outstripping any reductions in the public sector. As a result of the economic pact we signed in June last year, the government and the executive are working more closely together than ever before on the economy. And this year, Northern Ireland is predicted to grow faster than most of the world's major developed economies. So things are moving in the right direction on the economy. But just think how much better things could be if we could fix those key problems which are still holding us back. So in conclusion, I would strongly urge all participants to maintain the positive, businesslike and constructive engagement with which they began at the talks in Stormont on Thursday. Sometimes the task before us feels impossible, but I approach these negotiations with hope. And I do so because, as Her Majesty the Queen said in her memorable speech in City Hall this summer, Northern Ireland's political leaders have shown that they are capable of making the impossible possible. And of course, that includes many members of the Ulster Unionist Party who have played such a huge part in the amazing progress we've seen in recent years. But I'm afraid the journey isn't over yet. We face a number of very serious and difficult tasks ahead. I'm determined to play my part in efforts to face up to them and overcome them. So too is the Prime Minister, who cares passionately about Northern Ireland and its people. And I believe that working with you and with others across the whole community here, we can succeed. We can build a better, more secure future for Northern Ireland and everyone who is lucky enough to call it home. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Secretary of State. As I said before, I'm going to call out a number of names, and I would ask the people to stand, and the roving mics will get to them. But there's just one small matter, Secretary of State, that I want to mention first. We have a gentleman in this room, one of our longest-serving members from our East Antrim constituency, Mr. Sandy Hunter, and he's celebrating his 75th year of membership of this party. Now, if that's not a target for some of the rest of you, I don't know what is. Thank you very much, Sandy. Your loyalty and hard work over the years is very greatly appreciated. Our first question is from Councillor Alex Redpath.
Madam Secretary of State, if in the upcoming all-party talks the parties agree to changes in the institutions, including an official opposition, would the government support these changes?
Well, we are very clear, both as a Conservative Party and as a government, that we'd like to see a move towards a formal system of opposition within the institutions. We think that would be a positive step forward in terms of democratic accountability. But it is key that support for such a change needs to be built across the parties. It would be a significant change, and we would need to build consensus for it. But I will continue to work for that. And it is, I have no doubt, will be on the agenda for discussion at these forthcoming talks. And I hope it's something that's taken very seriously. I believe it would be possible to do that and stay entirely within the principles of power sharing and inclusivity, which are enshrined in the Belfast Agreement. And I think it's important for us all to work out a way forward to see if we can't achieve that important goal.
Thank you. Our next question is from Tim Lemon from East Belfast, up at the front here.
Secretary of State, do you think that the current Stormont is sustainable in the short term, given the ongoing tension that's taken place up in the Assembly?
Yes, I think it is sustainable. I think that, there's still important work underway, not least from your own minister here, Danny, and the work that he's been doing on transport and a whole range of issues. And I think the executive has a very distinguished and impressive record on attracting inward investment. So it's wrong to say that the institutions are sort of incapable of continuing, but there is also no doubt that they could be operating better and that they are now being sort of actively held back by the problems around the budget and with the tensions that arise in relation to issues like flags parading in the past. So if we're going to enable the executive to deliver to its full potential and full capacity, then we need to try and find a way forward on those issues. But yes, there is important work still being done, still being achieved, still being taken forward. But I think if we could get a resolution and find a way forward in these talks, then that will provide even greater opportunities for the executive to deliver on the things that are really matter to people in Northern Ireland.
Thank you. Question number three is from Robert McGee.
Secretary of State, with welfare being a crucial issue on the current talks that are ongoing, is there any more flexibility on welfare?
The deal on the table, which has been offered to the Northern Ireland Executive, does contain some very important flexibilities, but the deal is as far as the UK government is able to go. It's simply not possible for us to provide extra funding to run a more expensive system of welfare in Northern Ireland. As we all know here, it's a devolved matter. There is a choice, therefore, for Northern Ireland as to whether it breaks with parity or whether it sticks with the principles of welfare that are applying in Great Britain. But if it chooses to break parity, it really has to be funded from the block grant. And my concern is that that makes it so much more difficult for the executive to fund all its other crucially important priorities, not least of which is health, schools, and a particular concern of mine, that is the PSNI. They do a tremendous job, and they need to be appropriately resourced.
Thank you. Question number four is from Councillor Richard Smart.
Secretary of State, thank you for joining us today. I wanted to ask if you believe the Prime Minister can get a better deal in Europe ahead of any referendum? Thank you.
Yes, I do. I think that there is a recognition across many of the capitals of Europe that things do need to change. I think this country is not alone in, for example, having concerns about the way the rules on free movement of labour are now working. They were, after all, originally constructed 50 years ago. It is clear that they do need to change, and I think we already enjoy a degree of support on that from Germany, and it is a matter of concern to other countries as well. So, yeah, if we are in government after the 7th of May next year, that this will be the highest of our priorities to reshape our relationship with Europe in a very, very serious way to respond to the concerns that people right across the UK genuinely have about this. I think it is possible. There is an opportunity. We'll seize it. I think it is vitally important that we then give people the right in this country to vote on whether we leave the European Union or whether we don't. I think that referendum is something for which people have huge support. They want to make the final choice on our relationship with Europe, and it's the Conservatives who will give them that choice.
Thank you. Next question is from Jill McCauley, South Down.
Madam Secretary of State, the current budget crisis is having a major impact on policing. Can I ask, are there any concerns for the safety of the UK as a whole from our impending policing crisis?
Well, clearly the Chief Constable has set out some very serious consequences which are resulting from the latest round of budget reductions. They are in a significant part due to the refusal of the Nationalist parties to implement welfare reform. And of course also the police are under pressure with the cost of policing protests in North Belfast as well. So there are combined pressures on them at the moment. I think this is something that needs to be dealt with as a matter of urgency. As I said in my speech, you know, the reality is every administration across the world has had to look at ways to cut the cost of government so that they can prioritise the front line. That's in large part what's been done by the Home Office in England and Wales, where they've had to absorb some quite significant reductions in policing budgets, but actually crime is falling and we've found a way to push as much as we possibly can into the front line. But obviously the PSNI face particular challenges. The distant threat means that the PSNI face unique difficulties which do need to be reflected in their funding, and that is in part why the government has provided an extra $230 million. But I think the concerns around PSNI resources make it more important than ever that we see a resolution on these budget issues, that welfare reform goes ahead, and that we don't see resources diverted into running a flawed and more expensive legacy welfare system when they could be used to support community policing and the many projects that the PSNI is supporting to actually bring people together, to build community understanding and to bring communities together.
Thank you. Our final question this afternoon, and it's in no way a leading question at all, Secretary of State, is from Sky Ochey.
Secretary of State, corporation tax will be a major factor in rebuilding our economy. Does the government still support its devolution?
The decision on whether to devolve corporation tax to Northern Ireland is going to be made by the Prime Minister and his colleagues in the next few weeks. As I've said on many occasions, I can see that there could be really significant benefits for Northern Ireland if devolution goes ahead. But this is a difficult question, and it's one that has required careful thought. But what I can say is that the technical work has been underway on this issue, and the Treasury and Revenue and Customs have been looking in great detail about how a devolved regime might work and what legislation might look like if the decision to press ahead in principle is made by the Prime Minister. So I think really significant progress has been made on this question. It's taken very seriously, including at the highest levels of government. And the decision in principle will be announced soon. If that's yes, then we would be in a position to legislate during this Parliament. So in the light of the extensive work that's been underway over recent months to try and make technical preparations for the potential devolution of corporation tax.
Thank you very much indeed. Secretary. That concludes our Q&A. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
Well, we're greatly indebted for the Secretary of State for coming along to us this afternoon, so let's give her a good Ulsterness. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are coming to the close of our conference, and I'm sure, like me, you're greatly encouraged by what I thought was a very constructive, positive session, both yesterday with our dinner last night, with our breakfast this morning, and with our debates on the economy and the moving discussion on health. But at the end of the day, I believe that the Leader set out in his speech a very inspiring message. I think he's got the momentum, the big mo, and this party is getting its mojo back. And with that in mind, we move on to the next battle, and that will be fought out over the next few months as we move towards the general election. Sadly, I suspect that things in Parliament are looking very sour and very difficult at the moment. I'm not sure that it's going to be the most constructive 6 months in our political history as a country, and I'm not sure that the Fixed Term Parliament Act was a good idea. because many people would say, well, if we have an election, get it out of the way, and then the country can get on with business. But we are where we are, and I think we're in a much better place than we were in the last 12 months. So, Mike, thank you again for what you're doing. We really appreciate it, and I think you have lit the fuse, and it's up to us now to deliver on your behalf and to support all our representatives over the next 6 months as we work towards the election.